to embody that. Unfortunately, Orson Krennic wasn't the person to command it. Tarkin wondered what and how much Krennic wasn't telling him. Keeping from the Emperor his plans to appropriate construction materials for the project was only one sign of his overarching ambition, his impulsiveness, his disdain for authority and the chain of command. No, he simply wasn't the man for the job. But incendiary Krennic was perfectly suited to be the one held accountable for all the setbacks and delays that were bound to plague the project. Exposing him, undermining him, would take very little effort. And yet doing so would pose a great risk to Tarkin. For he knew full well that the Emperor was also eyeing him to assume command and control of the battle station. To avoid having to accept the privilege prematurely, he would have to continue to defer to Krennic until the proper time. Perhaps he would ask Darth Vader to keep an eye on him. He and Vader had partnered successfully in a couple of Imperial missions, and the Dark Lord might just be intrigued enough to get involved. A short jump away, the bleak future Tarkin envisioned for Samovar was already playing out on Malpass. It was on Malpass, under the Project Celestial Power umbrella, that Krennic had constructed a facility intended to make practical application of the research being conducted on distant Coruscant, that was, to weaponize Galen Erso's energy research in order to arm the battle station. It even housed a twin of the massive Kyber crystal that was the subject of Galen's current experiments. Except that things hadn't gone according to plan. From the safety of his shuttle, Krennic watched a series of powerful mushrooming explosions reduce what little remained of the duplicate facility to debris and ash. The metropolis that sprawled at the base of the hill on which the installation had been constructed was likewise engulfed in rapidly spreading flames. Worse, a primitive nuclear power plant had melted down during the initial detonations and firestorms, and now a mass exodus was in progress, with hundreds of thousands of mixed species indigenes fleeing for the far side of the Broad River. Everyone hoped might contain the conflagration. The devastation couldn't have been more crippling had a volcano blown its top in the heart of the city. "Did we lose anyone?" Krennic asked his aide.
"It's incredible,"
Ollanta said from the shuttle's comm board.
"But the failsafes allowed everyone to evacuate in time."
"The locals weren't as lucky. Estimate of fatalities? In excess of 10,000. Radiation from the reactor will likely kill more than the explosions and fires combined."
Krennic worked his jaw.
"Who do I blame?"
Ollanta gestured toward the main cabin space.
"The team's assembled."
Krennic squared his shoulders and stormed away. The 10-member team of scientists, which now included a couple of former separatists, was crammed into the aft cabin, looking nervous and hangdog. A few of them were gauze-bandaged or slathered in bombs.
"First, tell me that we haven't lost the Kyber," Krennic said.
"It's all but indestructible,"
a human member of the team said.
"Once the fire burns out, we can retrieve it."
Krennic nodded.
"That will get some of you off the hook. But one of you needs to explain to me how a simple experiment could total everything I built, not to mention an entire city. You had all the research notes. Was there anything in them you might have missed or overlooked?"
"The energy output was uncontainable,"
Professor Sahali said, obviously speaking for everyone.
"The crystal diffracted the laser instead of supplying the expected pulse of power. It might as well have been an out-of-control turbo-laser battery."
"Then why didn't the same thing happen in our sister facility?"
You had to have misinterpreted the data or failed to follow procedure.
The Iktachi specialist, Degyo Belkos, responded.
The data are very difficult to construe. If we are in fact only replicating previous experiments, then our sister team has to be employing some other method of harvest and control. Perhaps they used a different laser or found a way to channel excess output into storage capacitors. They may be using a different inhibition alloy.
His downward-facing horns shook as he spoke.
The data simply aren't specific enough in many instances, and even where they are specific, the equations are in a kind of shorthand, difficult to decipher.
Squatza Harley agreed.
Someone understands the properties of the Kaiba much better than we do. We'll never be fully successful at weaponization without the original researcher to supervise these experiments.
Krennic growled in exasperation and was headed back to the communications cabin when he realized that Degyo Belkos was following him.
What is it?
He said, whirling on the Iktachi.
It's clear to me who's behind the research,
Belkos said.
Galen Erso.
Krennic considered refuting it, but instead said,
What if he is?
We need him here. With us.
Krennic's nostrils flared.
He's busy elsewhere, Doctor. And I suggest you devote yourself to determining where you went wrong, rather than focus on Galen Erso's employment options, so that next time you'll be able to provide me with the expected results.
Belkos took a step back, as if Krennic's words alone had propelled him. Then he turned and hurried to rejoin the others. Ollanta was standing by the shuttle's viewport.
It won't do for word of this to get out, he said. Should we sanitize everything? Can the destruction be made to look like an attack? It already does.
Krennic gave it thought. He supposed he could blame the reactor, blame the locals. Contained the survivors in detention camps. What with the radiation, it would be for their own good anyway.
Then leave it be,
he told Ollanta finally. But remove the team. Chapter 17. Material Implications. Hass descended the freighter's lowered ramp and walked to the high bank of the estuary. Shielding his eyes, he looked toward the sea. The offshore breeze was warm and constant, and the crystalline waters moved lazily on the tide. Far out where the inlet met the sea, the water was deep blue, and much farther out, a range of conical mountains poked from the hazy horizon, as if floating on the broom. The summit of the tallest volcano, invisible behind a lenticular cloud. In the middle ground were scattered islands of rock, green and yellow vegetation clinging to clefts, and steep sides carved into isolated sandy coves. Hass turned to the chief of the crown crew that had been on hand to meet him. A short human, she had the look he was becoming more and more accustomed to since having thrown in with Métis. Fit, furtive, capable-looking, sporting sensibly close-cropped hair. Behind her, the five members of her team were helping Hass's crew offload shipping containers from the freighter's forward cargo bay. The ground crew had arrived in a couple of airspeeders with a short train of repulsor-lift cargo haulers. Sparse vegetation sprouted from red clay soil on both sides of the estuary. The sky was as clear as any he had ever seen from below. He knew from coming in that there wasn't a major population center for thousands of kilometers in any direction.
Choice duty, he said to the crew chief.
For short stretches. You'd need to be a hermit to want to stay.
Not much in the way of nightlife.
Good for lantern bugs.
She wiped sweat from her forehead and gestured in a vague way out to sea. Terlin Benthic Extraction has a small settlement on the western shore. Rotating mixed species couple of hundred. Slim pickings as far as company goes, but the drinks are cheap and the food is tolerable.
That's the extent?
No permanent settlements permitted, since a group of environmentalists succeeded in having Wadi declared a legacy world.
Of course, Hass told himself. Turlin Benthic, he repeated. Don't know of them.
Mining consortium. They have a concession for ocean floor extraction.
Hass nodded. I caught a glimpse of their platforms when we came in.
Mostly a droid operation. But a few living pilots as well.
What are they dredging up?
What I learned when I was hired? The sea has some large areas of polymetallic nodules in the active hydrothermal vents. The vents create deposits that contain ores like dunium, melinium, dolovite, camrys. TB uses hydraulic pumps to bring ores to the surface to be processed. The tailings are collected and sent to off-world cleansing centers.
They care that much about pollution?
Like I said, they have no choice. Wadi being legacy.
So Turlin Benthic's the end user of our cargo?
She stopped what she was doing to smile in a knowing way. Can't have too many redundant pipe fittings.
Except they're not pipe fittings.
Yes, they are. She said in elaborate seriousness. It says so right in the manifest.
Hass forced a laugh that made it appear he was in on the joke.
Wadi Rafa was Samovar all over again.
A choke point commander had provided him with landing coordinates and instructed him to come in as gently as possibly, employing the freighter's retroturbos rather than positioning thrusters.
He took a moment to monitor the unloading. Everyone seemed relaxed, not worried the way people normally were when arms or spice or other prescribed goods were involved. Because the fix was in. So why couldn't he be happy as well? Was he supposed to worry about the futures of planets like Samovar and Wadi Rafa? Wasn't that the Emperor's job? All Hass had to do was follow procedure, take the credits and run, like he always had. So why was he feeling dirty? And why did his stomach feel like it was tied in knots? He knew the answer, and knew too that there was no value in thinking too deeply about Métis's lies or the Empire's possible reasons for using subterfuge rather than turbo lasers to appropriate planets.
You hauling the containers out to sea?
He asked, trying to sound innocent.
She shook her head. The platforms are too far out. The cargo's being picked up.
Hass searched the sky.
How?
She prized a pair of macro binoculars from a case, clipped to her belt, and offered them.
Pressing them to his eyes, he scanned the horizon, seizing on an object he brought into focus and exhaling in surprise.
Is that vessel actually floating on the water?
She guffawed. It's like something out of a historical holodrama, right? That's what happens on legacy worlds. Primitive as it can get.
Hass handed back the macros.
How are they going to make the case that a company doing seabed mining on a legacy world would want ion cannons?
She narrowed her eyes at him, then looked around as if someone might be listening.
Protection.
Hass wasn't entirely sure if she was in on the plan or not. Maybe she actually worked for the mining company and had no idea that it was on a setup. Or maybe she just didn't want Hass to know that she knew.
Someone takes a sudden interest in this place and they're going to be put off by a boat sporting a couple of separatist-era ion cannons?
She shrugged.
Okay. Then maybe the company's worried about deep-sea creatures. Monsters from the seabed.
This human wasn't going to play ball.
You know the one about bringing a vibro blade to a blaster fight?
He commented.
Is it supposed to be funny?
Not for the one who brings the vibro blade.
Lyra was up late, transcribing Galen's personal notes, being careful to observe his precise but complex instructions. The research team's notes were compiled by others and transmitted to facilities elsewhere on Coruscant or off-world for all she knew. As project liaison, Orson was privy to all the latter, but not the former. Jin was only meters away in a play area they had created and cordoned off to keep her from wandering too far. Most kids her age would have been asleep hours ago, but Jin had inherited her father's nocturnal habits, and Lyra had given up trying to interfere with her natural rhythms. Luckily for everyone, Jin was independent and often able to entertain herself, sometimes for hours at a stretch, singing, playing, pretending, as she was doing now. Light from the surrounding superstructures flooded through the office window, but the view was anything but stimulating. There was only the towering expanse of plasteel wall that enclosed the former refuge grounds and the sky-high buildings that rose above it. Someone had planted flowering vines at the base of the wall, but they had yet to climb more than 2 meters. Even so, Lyra had made a habit of taking long walks with Jin on the grounds, usually at night when the area around the facility was more gently lighted, the arcologies and monads notwithstanding. And despite the feeling of walking on the bottom of an enormous, waterless swimming pool, she could feel the facility beating and breathing around her, though frigid at the core. Galen was surely still up as well, off somewhere doing something. When he wasn't directing experiments, he could usually be found in his office, writing in the air or doing input at a keyboard. Other times he would resort to entering calculations or notes in his journal, writing longhand in different colored inks, as if thinking shifted from one aspect of problem-solving to the next. At the end of such sessions, Lyra would collate the notes by color, then return them to him for further refinement. Forced to wear several hats, he alternated between distracted scientist and harried husband and father, but in some ways he seemed more content than he had been in years. He could requisition anything he needed. Lasers, metals, chemicals, consultants, Jedi datacrons. And the requests would arrive in short order, no questions asked. Additional crystals of all sizes continued to flood in, some of them clearly liberated from temples, as they bore minute traces of adhesive, like gems prized from their bezels. She had grown accustomed to periods like these when his mind was on fire, when he was physically present but emotionally distant. Frequently, she couldn't help but feel that her every attempt to engage him interrupted some inner dialogue or discourse he was attending, and the facility somehow magnified that. At times it seemed as if, in attempting to unlock the secrets of the Kyber, he was trying to decode something about himself. She was willing to accept that the Jedi hadn't scratched the surface of the crystal's power, but she held on to her belief that the Order felt that surface wasn't meant to be scratched. By contrast, what better way to honor the Order's contribution to more than a millennium of service than to use their sacrosanct Kybers to provide inexpensive and safe energy to countless worlds? After all, there was no denying that the galaxy was at peace, except for areas where separatist holdouts were alleged to be entrenched, possibly unaware that the war had ended. Little news from those areas made it to the Holonet, but she had heard talk to the effect that some distant worlds were still attempting to acquire weapons, but also that the Empire was moving swiftly to curtail those attempts.
"We will do whatever is necessary to ensure an enduring reconciliation,"
the Emperor had said in a recent and rare public address. She could only hope that that strong hand would relax once the threats disappeared. Neither optimistic nor pessimistic, she could do little more than hope that Jin would grow up in more stable times. She glanced at Galen's multicolored notes and sat back from them, unable to get to the root of her uneasiness. All at once the comm sounded, which was unusual given the late hour. Plus, the display revealed the communication to be from an unknown party and origin point. Thinking back to the message that had found its way to her comm link during the war, she hesitated. But when she accepted the comm,
she was delighted to see the face of Galen's friend and one-time mentor, Reva Demain.
Lyra, Reva said, equally elated. How lovely to see you.
You too, Reva.
Lyra had always been drawn to the Mary Allen's dark complexion and exotic facial tattoos.
I apologize for the late hour, but I decided to take the chance.
You didn't wake us. I'm working on Galen's notes, but he's not here. I can tell him to contact you.
Please do. But tell me first how you've been.
Good. Everything's fine.
And Jin? How is she?
I can show you. Lyra trained one of the holocams on Jin, who was using her toy figures to act out some sort of adventure fantasy.
Precious. You must both be so proud.
We are.
I'm so glad that Galen found a position that suits him.
It's been exciting, if somewhat daunting.
I know the feeling. Since Galen and I, many of us in fact, are all serving the same master.
Lyra angled her head in surprise.
You're contributing to celestial power?
Yes,
Reva said without enthusiasm.
Tell me, Lyra, has Galen heard from Daegyo Belkos recently?
Daegyo? Why should he? I mean, they made up after the little boxing match, but they were never close friends. As far as I know, Galen hasn't heard from any of his old friends. You're the first. Reva looked distressed.
It's so strange. I've been trying to contact many of our mutual colleagues without success. Daegyo was working on Malpaz. It's a bit worrisome, actually.
I can see how it would be, Lyra said. Where are you, Reva?
I'm on Hippori. I know you're a galactic traveler. Have you ever visited here?
Before Lyra could answer in the negative, Reva said,
Galen is content with his work?
Lyra restrained a frown of doubt. You know him. When the research is going well, he is.
And he's still working closely with Orson Krennic?
Lyra took a moment to answer. Yes, Reva. Why do you ask?
It's just that I see Orson from time to time.
Lyra waited for more, but Reva fell silent.
I'll tell Galen to contact you, Reva.
He doesn't have to. Just tell him that I said hello and that I hope that we'll have a chance to catch up in person. I'm on Hippori, remember. Hippori.
The calm ended abruptly. Lyra sat for a long while staring at the empty holofield. Reva hadn't said all she had wanted to say. Was she under surveillance in whatever research work she was engaged in? Lyra replayed the conversation in her head, then thought, she wants us to know where she is. Krennic felt like a glorified tour guide as he ordered the shuttle pilot to bring the wide-winged shuttle closer to the battle station's parabolic dish. They had already completed an equatorial orbit as well as a polar one, pausing now and then to examine specific areas of the curved technoscape, designated for shield generators and gun towers. Krennic talked non-stop, but thus far neither Grand Vizier Amida nor any of his flamboyantly attired advisors had asked a single question. The orb was more completely clad, and a few gun emplacements were under construction in the trench, the battle station's broad equator. Local space was crowded with ships and droids of all classification, with large areas of the hull bathed in light provided by banks of enormous illuminators. Do any of you have an interest in visiting some of the interior modules? Krennic asked.
Not unless you have a weapon to show us, Amida said at last.
Just now the reactor is our priority.
Amida glowered.
What is the status of the weapon, Lieutenant Commander?
We're making slow but steady progress.
The Shagrian showed scorn.
We can accept steady, but slow is unacceptable. Need we remind you again that this isn't some public works program for Poggle's enslaved descendants? The weapon is the priority. The station is nothing without it.
Weaponizing the research is taking more time than anticipated, Krennic said in a firm voice.
Then you need to demand more from your scientists.
Krennic made a placating gesture. We've already eliminated a lot of dead weight. I'm winnowing them down to a core group.
That's not what I'm referring to. Security is of lesser concern to us than progress, of which we have seen very little.
Amida paused, then added,
We understand that you almost lost your team on Malpass.
Krennic managed to keep from grimacing. He hadn't known that Amida had learned of the incident. A temporary setback. We're reanalyzing the data.
I'm interested to hear your account of what happened.
Krennic led with a shrug. The locals mismanaged their nuclear reactor.
Is that your story?
It's a story, Krennic said, refusing to yield. Amida had fire in his eyes.
Either you're rushing your team headlong into areas they don't fully understand, or Erso's data are beyond their ken.
Krennic grinned. You've got a gift for delivering mixed messages, Vizier.
Demand more from my team or exercise caution. Which is it?
Amida's forked tongue flicked.
We've given Galen Erso an entire facility. We're providing him with resources and materials from all over the galaxy. We're practically at his beck and call, and still you failed to enlist him.
The Vizier lowered his horns.
The Emperor is most displeased by these delays. Furthermore, who gave you authority to enlist Imperial forces in the appropriation of mining concerns?
Krennic squared his shoulders. It struck me as the most expeditious way of getting what we need. A low growl escaped Amida.
You are nothing if not resourceful. But once again, you've superseded your authority.
In the interest of simplicity, Krennic said. The last time we had this discussion, Vizier, I thought we'd agreed that you were going to allow me to do my job.
I don't recall agreeing to anything of the sort. In any case, you no longer enjoy the privilege of ignoring the chain of command.
Krennic stared, awaiting elaboration.
We feel that we have overburdened you.
Amida went on in a falsely offhand way.
You should be attending solely to the weapon, leaving procurement and production to others.
Tarkin, Krennic thought, wondering how Amida would react to learning that the Moth had sanctioned the illegal acquisitions. Not that Krennic would be the one to breach Imperial etiquette and loyalty by revealing that. Not openly, at any rate.
Until further notice, appropriations operations are suspended,
Amida was saying.
You'll have to make do with materials on hand, or find legitimate ways to procure them. As it stands, we're going to need to find someone to assume responsibility for what you've done.
I have some thoughts about that, Krennic said.
I'm certain you do.
Krennic waited a beat, then said, I think it would help if you promoted me. Amida glared at him.
Is there no limit to your insolence? On what grounds?
A promotion would send a clear signal to the scientists and everyone else involved in the project that I'm making headway, and that they need to jump at my command. Rear Admiral would suffice. Amida forced a fatigued exhale.
Full commander, perhaps. And only on the Emperor's approval.
Krennic inclined his head in a bow. Clearly, the time had come to play his royal card.
Chapter 18. Combinatory Play. Ryloth,
officially a protectorate of the Empire, was celebrating the anniversary of a major battle against the Separatists during the Clone Wars. But it was as grim a parade as Haas had ever attended. No balloons or banners or flag waving from the viewing stands. Just a couple of thousand native Twi'leks of several colors and head-tail lengths massed behind electro-cordons and looking as if they'd been dragged from their residences to bear witness to formations of stormtroopers marching through the streets of Lesu towards something called the Plasma Bridge. The blast-carrying effectives were preceded by a 20-strong group of indigenes and trailed by Imperial walkers and tanks to the accompaniment of martial music and deafening overflights by squadrons of freshly minted TIE fighters. Anyone would think that the Empire had been responsible for liberating the planet, when in fact it was a homegrown revolutionary named Cham Syndulla. Aided and abetted by a couple of Jedi and clone troopers, who had defeated Shakoan Techno-Union foreman Wat Tambor and his legions of battle droids. Haas had arrived just as the festivities were getting started, and was still puzzled at why Métis had called him halfway across the galaxy instead of meeting at their usual table in the Wanton Wellspring. More than a month had passed since the delivery to Wadi Rafa. Normally, Haas was not a follower of the news, but after what had happened at Samovar, he had made it a point to learn whether Wadi had suffered a similar fate. Sure enough, a HoloNet service he subscribed to had sent him an article buried among more noteworthy stories reporting that Turlin Benthic Extraction had been accused of procuring arms. The Legacy World's deep-sea mining operations had been seized by the Empire, and the world declared off-limits. Haas's freighter was parked at the orbital cordon. Given the TIE fighter aerial display, all downside-bound traffic was on hold. Regardless, the troopers who boarded his ship had been ordered to shuttle him to the surface and deposit him at the local Imperial Garrison HQ, in an office that happened to overlook the parade route. He was standing at the window watching one of the four-legged Imperial walkers clomp by when the office door opened and a nondescript major entered the room, carrying a dossier under his arm. The way the officer sized him up made him think of his first meeting with Orson Krennic all those years ago. "Take a seat, Captain," the human said. Haas did while trying to read the writing on the dossier.
"Is Métis going to be joining us?"
The officer looked at him.
"It is my sad duty to inform you that Métis is no longer with us."
"No longer with dead, I'm afraid." The news hit Haas like a kiloton of concrete.
"When? How? I heard from him a standard week ago."
"An industrial accident, apparently."
It sounded like code for something untoward, but Haas pursued it anyway.
"At the depot?"
"I believe so, yes."
Haas loosed a sad and suddenly weary exhalation.
"Just when he got that ocular implant."
"Pity,"
the officer said without conviction.
"It is also my duty to inform you that all operations are being suspended."
A second kiloton of surprise hit him.
"Until when?"
"Indefinitely."
"I just put a hefty down payment on a new freighter," Haas said, despite the futility of it. "I've been spreading credits around to help my friends."
"Regrettable,"
the officer interrupted.
"But these things happen. Here one day, gone the next."
"Like Métis."
"Unfortunately, yes."
Haas wilted in his chair.
"So where does that leave me? And why'd you have me come all this way for a death announcement? You could have calmed and at least saved me the fuel."
The human's upper lip curled in distaste, a touch of the new officiousness.
"You are here because I received orders to relay a personal message that cannot be trusted to Comlink for whatever reasons."
Haas raised his eyes.
"A message from who?"
"Lieutenant Commander Krennic."
of the Corps of Engineers.
Haas opened his mouth, but no words emerged. He gulped and tried again without result.
I'm told that you two are acquainted.
From years ago,
Haas managed.
But
I can't imagine how or why, but that's not my concern. The commander asks that you report to him on Coruscant soonest.
He extracted a military-grade comlink from the dossier envelope and set it on the desk.
You're to use this when you arrive.
Haas didn't want to reach for it, but he did, turning it over in his trembling hands.
Coded.
The officer shrugged. Also none of my concern.
Why, Coruscant?
The human took a deep breath, clearly annoyed. That's for you to know and for me to remain ignorant about. In this instance, I am merely the messenger.
Sudden commotion outside the window brought both of them out of their chairs. Below, a group of chanting Twi'leks carrying placards that read, Free Ryloth Movement and the Hammer of Ryloth, had dodged the cordon and were dispersing onto the wide boulevard. Brought to a sudden halt, the nearest company of stormtroopers had regrouped in close order formation. Still, the head-tailed humanoids kept coming. A shouted order from an officer, and the troopers raised their weapons. A follow-up command sent pulses of energy surging over the heads of the protesters, but failed to slow the crowd. Something told Haas that the Empire was about to claim another world. Krennic had been an infrequent visitor to the facility. So when he told Galen he would be dropping by, Galen was thrilled and demanded that he stay for dinner. Krennic arrived without stormtroopers, but in full dress uniform and with wines for the occasion, both dinner and dessert vintages. Galen was waiting when he set his airspeeder down on the landing zone, and they greeted each other warmly. Lyra and the child joined them in the lobby, and the four of them spent more than an hour touring the complex. Galen speaking animatedly about the energy research, as if soliciting Krennic's approval. Lyra, quiet and lagging behind, and the child hurrying ahead of everyone, wearing a toy sword and a scabbard, and holding two stuffed animals in her arms. Night was falling by the time the quartet made their way to the Urso's comfortable residence, where Krennic opened one of the bottles of wine, and Lyra planted her daughter in front of a viewer to watch the octave stairway, apparently the child's current favorite bedtime story. The view from the living room window was sublime, encompassing a copse of gargantuan trees the Bancora had planted centuries earlier, and rising beyond those, some of the city world's newest and most daring skyscrapers. Krennic could almost forget that they were on Coruscant. He had hoped Lyra would have come to feel that way, but judging by the surveillance recordings of her conversations with family and friends, she was bored and unhappy. Weeks earlier, Krennic had learned that Riva Demain had tried to contact Galen, ostensibly to say hello, but in fact to snoop about. Demain knew nothing of the battle station, but the shield generator program she headed had been folded into the special weapons group. And some of the scattered researchers had begun to compare notes. Fortunately, it was Lyra who had spoken with Demain, and Krennic had made a thorough study of their conversation. If Lyra had concerns about Galen's research to begin with, then the Mary Allen scientist's veiled inquiries had probably doubled them. And before too long, Lyra's objections to the program were going to become problematic. Krennic had seen the day coming as far back as the discussion they'd had shortly after the war ended, and recordings of conversations between Galen and Lyra had confirmed that her misgivings had only increased. Demain had stopped short of alluding to rumors of the weaponizing of Galen's research, but she had made her own concerns about the project almost palpable, and Krennic couldn't allow Lyra's apprehensions to go unchecked. As for Galen, he was so far too seduced by the facility and all it offered to think much beyond the crystals. Krennic waited until dessert was being served to steer the conversation where it needed to go.
Are you too happy here?
He asked, after they had lifted their glasses in a toast to lasting peace. The abruptness of his question seemed to catch Lyra by surprise, but Galen was quick to respond.
It's close to having a dream come true.
He covered Lyra's hand with his own, as if to suggest that she was with him. Or was it a subtle signal to her that she exercised caution? Krennic looked at Galen.
You're receiving all that you need?
Supplies arrive daily. I couldn't ask for more.
Krennic smiled and let the silence linger.
I know about the requisitions and supplies, but I'm asking about your personal needs.
He gestured broadly.
As nice as this place is, it could strike some as a rather lonely outpost.
Lyra bit back something she was about to say, but Galen was intent on reassuring him.
We're only hours from anything we lack here. We kept the apartment. Jin plays with the children of other scientists. Lyra will be homeschooling her.
Krennic addressed Lyra directly, keeping his tone sociable.
I guess we have established that Galen is happy, and it sounds as though the child's needs are being met. But I'm mostly concerned about you.
She flushed.
Me?
She might as well have said since when. But Krennic stuck to his script.
I mean, between motherhood and what you do for Galen, you don't have a lot of time for yourself. I'm simply curious if you're fine with having put your life on hold. Temporarily, in any case.
She regarded him frankly.
I haven't put my life on hold, Orson. My career, maybe, but certainly not my life.
He showed the palms of his hands.
Maybe I didn't put that right.
I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. What exactly are you trying to get at?
Galen was glancing back and forth between the two of them.
Just this. We have data on what purports to be an extensive vein of Kyber crystals on an outer rim world. Because of matters we can discuss later, I can't trust just anyone with a saying the extent of the find.
Do you need a recommendation?
Lyra asked.
No, I want you to consider undertaking the survey.
He gave it time to settle in.
It's not a dangerous assignment.
A group of archaeologists already have a small but comfortable research camp set up. You could include one or more of your former teammates if you wish. In fact, it's safe enough for you to take the child along as well.
Galen and Lyra were exchanging shocked looks.
You should do it,
Galen said without question.
Lyra shook her head.
Galen, we need to talk about this.
And we will. But I think this would be something wonderful for you. You know, I've been concerned about your sacrificing your interests for mine.
I'm hardly sacrificing myself, Galen. Being here was as much my choice as yours.
She looked from Galen to Krennic and back again.
Anything else either of you want to say about my life?
You don't need to give me a decision right now, Krennic assured her.
I just want you to consider it.
I'm serious,
Galen told Lyra.
You can't pass this up.
Think what an experience like this would mean for Jin.
Krennic watched her. Will she ask if he's trying to get rid of her? She didn't. Instead, she said,
Orson, do you have any idea how long the survey will take?
Krennic rocked his head from side to side.
You'll know better than I once I provide you with the data.
But I suspect not more than a couple of standard months. He looked at Galen.
Can you spare her and your daughter for that long?
Galen put his lips together and nodded.
We've been separated for longer periods.
He didn't mention Vault, but the implication was clear.
But your notes, Lyra said.
He touched her hand again.
We'll hold off transcribing them until you return.
Lyra inhaled and blew out her breath, then pushed her auburn hair back from her forehead.
First the facility, now this.
She turned to Krennic.
What else do you have up your sleeve?
New Imperial regulations regarding travel had required Lyra and Jin to be scanned, interviewed, and subjected to multiple identity checks
before being allowed access to the minor landing zone that served the research facility, situated in the heart of the Arcologies that walled it to the west. But the trip didn't seem entirely real until scanners at the sprawling Central District spaceport had cleared them to board the maglev that served a portion of the spaceport reserved for the arrivals and departures of private ships. Now here they were, threading their way between enormous starships en route to the hangar at which she was to rendezvous with Nari Sable, whom she hadn't seen in person in close to 4 years. She had wrestled with accepting Orson's assignment for more than 3 standard weeks, vacillating between excitement and a sense of vague unease about leaving Galen to his own devices. They had discussed it endlessly, and while he had never been less than encouraging and enthusiastic, she had begun to wonder whether he wanted her gone. And maybe that was actually the case. That at this stage of the research, he felt that he needed to devote himself fully to it without having to concern himself with her contentment or Jin's development. Precisely the way she often felt at social occasions, worrying about whether he was having a good time. Now, though, all the weeks of uneasiness and indecision were behind her, and she was exhilarated about embarking on an adventure. As the maglev came to a stop near the designated hangar, she gave Jin's hand an affectionate squeeze.
"This is going to be so much fun."
Jin nodded.
"Is Papa going to miss us?"
"He sure is."
"Do you think he'll remember to eat?" "MacV will make him eat."
Their nanny and housekeeping droid.
"You're right.
MacV won't let him miss a single meal."
They were wearing backpacks and dressed in serviceable outfits, though Jin had insisted at the last minute on wearing a helmet that made her look like a starfighter pilot. Their luggage had been delivered ahead of time and was now at the mercy of droids responsible for moving everything from the terminal to the private hangar. As they hastened across the concrete apron toward the hemispherical building, Nari Sable emerged, dressed in a sleeveless belted tunic and lace-up boots, looking as if she had just arrived from the outer rim. Seeing Lyra, she quickened her pace, smiling broadly. As soon as she reached them, she pulled Lyra into a tight hug and kissed her on both cheeks.
"It's been way too long,"
she said into Lyra's ear.
"I know. Let's promise not to let that happen again."
Still smiling, Nari backed out of the embrace to appraise Lyra, running her fingertips over her old friend's face. Lyra took note of the faint lines around Nari's eyes, the result of having spent too much time in harsh sunlight, touches of premature gray in her hair, creases forming at the corners of her mouth. She was thin but still muscular, and her green eyes shone with the vitality of someone half her age. Then Nari's gaze fell on Jin, and she withdrew another step, her hand in front of her mouth in surprise.
"She's your twin!"
"Except for the helmet."
"Do you want to see what's in my backpack?"
Jin asked, already shrugging out of it. Nari went down on one knee in front of her.
"I sure do. But let's wait until we board our ship, okay? I brought macro binoculars, too." "You did? That's great, sweetie, because we're going to need them. As soon as we're inside, I want to see everything."
"Okay,"
Jin chirped. Nari stood up and gestured toward the hangar.
"Come and see our ride."
She put her arm around Lyra's shoulders as they walked. The two had been fast friends since childhood, though Nari was twice the athlete Lyra was, a runner, gymnast, old-school adventurer. Like Lyra, she had a history of serial relationships, but unlike Lyra, she had stuck to decisions made as a teenager to neither marry nor have children. Lyra thought of her as the woman she might have been had she taken that other fork in the road. Their different paths aside, they had shared many adventures, exploring, surveying, and mapping. Nari had been her maid of honor at the simple wedding that included Riva Demain as a guest. She had made Alderaan her home during the war. But,
with exploration back to full tilt, had worked steadily since, and even had access to a survey company starship. Lyra had been lucky to catch her between jobs, and on Coruscant, no less. The interior of the hangar was lit brightly enough for Lyra to get a good look at the ship. A compact freighter, it was lozenge-shaped with a wide fan tail and a dorsally mounted cockpit. It needed paint and bodywork, but appeared serviceable. "All of our equipment is already on board," Nari was saying. "They even provided us with a recording droid." Lyra nodded noncommittally. "Rough around the edges, but we've been in far worse."
"No kidding.
It's well maintained, and it looks a lot better on the inside." "The pilot is charming. He's Dresselian." The revelation didn't exactly stop her in her tracks, but the combination of Dresselian and pilot did make her blink. Although it wasn't until she spied him coming down the ramp that she understood why.
"Welcome aboard, Lyra," he said. "I don't know if you remember me, but..."
Lyra gaped openly. "Of course I remember you." Nari's fine brows knitted. "You two already know each other?" She thought for a moment. "I guess that makes sense. It's not what you think." "Not what I think?" Now her brows went up.
"Should I give you some privacy?"
"No, you need to hear this," Lyra said more strongly than she meant to. She turned back to the Dresselian.
"I'm sorry, I don't remember your name."
"Hass Obit."
She nodded. "Obviously, you still have a connection with Orson Krennic, Hass."
"Actually, I don't. Or at least I didn't until a few weeks ago. I've been mostly on my own since, back when. Freelancing, you know. The commander contacted me to see if I was available to pilot you to Alpin, and I said yes."
Lyra remained dubious.
"Freelancing what, exactly?"
"Merchandise, supplies, mail-run fruit."
"Then you're not a spy."
Nari was glancing back and forth between them.
"Does one of you want to catch me up?"
Lyra glanced at her.
"Hass was the pilot who flew Galen, Jin, and me off Vault during the war."
Nari nodded in comprehension.
"Where you were arrested?"
"Yes.
But Hass and Orson came to our rescue. Isn't that right?" Hass nodded.
"I was just the pilot, Lyra."
"And you're still just a pilot." "Commander Krennic doesn't want to give the impression that the survey is an Imperial mission, or that it has anything to do with the Imperial military."
"Give the impression? I need to hear from you that it's not an Imperial mission."
"It's nothing of the sort," Hass said. "That's why we're using my ship and not traveling with an escort of stormtroopers. This way, we can avoid being targeted by insurgents of any stripe."
He looked at Jin. "Your daughter has grown into a beautiful child." Lyra relaxed somewhat.
"Thank you, Hass."
Hass bent down to speak to Jin.
"You were just a baby when we met. I'm very glad to see you again."
Jin made no effort to conceal her inspection of his non-human features, especially the deep groove in his cranium.
"Do you want to see what's in my backpack?"
Lyra snorted. "Maybe I'll feel better about this once all of us unpack."
Chapter 19. Closed Interval. Krennic delayed his return to Geonosis on the expectation that Galen would contact him. The dark circles under Galen's eyes and the twitch in his left eyelid Krennic had observed during the recent dinner belied the scientist's declarations about being as happy as he had ever been, more grateful than he could put into words. Then there was the quickness with which he had embraced the idea of sending Lyra and Jin halfway across the galaxy on a treasure hunt. Even the brightest of dreams come true had shadowy recesses. The tensions that Krennic had sensed at the facility were far from settled. So when the comm came from Galen, he was prepared,
and had suggested that Galen come to Imperial Energy Division headquarters in the Central District so they could talk face to face. The Imperial Energy Division was new, but it too operated under the umbrella of Project Celestial Power. In fact, each separate department of the Battle Station Project had its own cover name and cover agency, and Galen wasn't alone in working for a counterfeit division and having his research put to alternative uses. Scattered across the galaxy were teams of scientists working on conventional weaponry, tractor beam and hyperdrive technology, even hull cladding systems. Each project was concealed behind names like Stellar Sphere, Mark Omega, and Pax Aurora. But all those paled in comparison with research on the superlaser. Krennic ushered Galen past bogus security personnel and employees and into his bogus office, which was adorned with hollow representations of energy complexes and installations on dozens of worlds. Immediately they caught Galen's eye and he asked about them. "Facilities in various stages of planning and readiness," Krennic told him, relieved to see that the bogus hollows could pass muster with someone of Galen's powers of discernment. "Have you heard from Lyra?" Galen nodded in an unfocused way. "She and Jin and Nari are still acclimating to Alpin, but they've already begun to investigate the cave system." "That's good news." "I knew they had settled into the archaeological camp, but I haven't had a chance to read Lyra's most recent report." He looked hard at Galen. "You must be lonely without them."
"At any other time, I know I would be. But right now, I'm so involved, I haven't been much of a husband or father, in any case."
"I'm certain that Lyra understands the importance of your work, as long as everything's all right between you two."
"More often than not.
I sometimes get the impression she thinks I'm a bad influence on you."
Galen's expression changed.
"That's not true. She just doesn't understand our partnership."
Krennic laughed to ease the mood.
"You know what I find interesting, or maybe ironic is the word? It's that each of us wants what's best for you. In a way, we're competing to make you happy, as old-fashioned as that sounds. And each of us has a different idea about what you should be doing.
Especially now that you two have a child, Lyra wants you to be settled on a course that will mean the most for the family. Fulfilled in a somewhat conventional way. And I maintain that you're meant for bigger things, and will continue to do whatever I can to bring opportunities to your attention."
Galen smiled thinly.
"Don't think I don't appreciate it."
"Why shouldn't I be your advocate?
I'm not a rival, like some of your jealous or envious peers. What's more, our relationship has profited both of us. Look where my supporting you has landed me. I'm like someone who discovered a wonderful artist and profits by being able to mingle with other exceptional talents."
Galen brushed aside the flattery.
"I remember some of the conversations we had in the Futures program, trading ideas. Have you achieved what you set out to do?"
Krennic rocked his head.
"More or less. You've never wanted a family."
"Seriously, Galen, can you imagine me a father?"
"You'd be quite the taskmaster, I'm sure. But serving the Republic and now the Empire has been enough for you."
Krennic paced away from Galen.
"How does an individual know what he or she is meant to do? I remember those conversations as well, but we grow up with dreams that sometimes aren't realized, so we explore different paths. If we're lucky, we find something we're good at, and that gives us hope and purpose."
He turned back to Galen.
"I wasn't born brilliant or especially talented, but I'm capable and I'm driven. And that's brought me to where I am. I stumbled onto something I'm good at, so I'm fulfilled in that sense. But I'm up against some serious challenges."
"Anything I can help with? Schematics, architectural plans.
At the moment, no. But I won't hesitate to ask if and when the opportunity arises.
Galen nodded, then gestured to the false hollow presentations.
I find all this encouraging, but,
Lyra's not the only one with doubts about the project.
Galen compressed his lips. I don't want you to think I'm an ingrate.
Nonsense! Krennic cut in. What's bothering you?
Reva Domain tried to contact me.
Krennic pretended surprise.
Reva? How is she?
Galen frowned at him.
You should know, shouldn't you? She's doing research for Celestial Power.
Yes, she is, but I'm not in close contact with everyone involved.
During the war, she was doing shield generator research, Galen went on. But before that, she was always as interested in energy enrichment as I am.
I'm not sure I see your point.
If she's back to exploring energy alternatives, why isn't she working with me on Coruscant instead of doing whatever she's doing on Hippori?
Krennic knew from the surveillance recordings that that particular cat was already out of the bag. But Galen's mention of the isolated world set him on edge. I can check into it.
Why didn't you raise these concerns weeks ago? I don't want Lyra to know that I have any reservations about what we're doing. She has issues enough about my working with Kaivas.
That makes no sense.
You're a scientist. Lyra and I are equally fascinated with the physical world. But she sees the Kyber as symbolic of the Jedi Order and the Force.
And you?
I don't think the Jedi went far enough in their use of the crystals.
You get no argument from me.
The Jedi were certainly aware of the tremendous potential, but they restrained themselves.
Precisely what they did with the Force, as some have said. If they had made use of their full powers, the war would have ended in a heartbeat, and the galaxy would be in a different state entirely. For all their purported objectivity, they weren't scientists, they were mystics. For 1,000 generations, that sufficed. Notions of right and wrong can no longer be dictated by a select group to safeguard some personal vision of the truth.
Galen offered a narrow-eyed nod. One thing I'll say in their favor is that they never made us fear them. When they certainly had the ability to.
Perhaps they should have, Krennic said, then added, we can talk history and philosophy until our heads spin. You still haven't told me what's bothering you. Do you need a break from the research? A sabbatical?
A sabbatical is the last thing I need,
Galen said with a suddenness that took Krennic by surprise.
I'm on the brink of an important discovery. But I need to know that my research is yielding results, Orson, that my work isn't all theory without practical application, that it can be replicated. The power potential is nothing short of awesome, but the resultant energy needs to be properly harvested and stored.
Krennic lowered his eyes and his voice. We were making headway.
What? If your teams haven't been able to reproduce my results, then someone isn't doing their job.
Everyone has been giving their best effort.
Then I don't understand.
Krennic snorted and raised his head. Are you in a position to leave the facility for a couple of days?
I told you, I don't need a break.
This won't be a break. In fact, it bears directly on your concerns. Galen searched Krennic's face.
Is this going to be another instance of your showing me something I need to see? Like you did at Grange? You'll have to tell me.
Alpen shone bright like a gemstone in deep space. Its high reflectivity wasn't due to ice and snow, but to mineral-rich seas that had dried up eons earlier, leaving behind sedimentary rock and crystallized elements that blanketed enormous areas of the principal landmass in dazzling white. Hassett had to pilot his ship through several lengthy jumps to reach the remote world. But by the time they set down at the archaeological station, Lyra had managed to shelve her suspicions about the mission and the Dresselians Partnet. She didn't need Haas or anyone else looking out for her or Jin, but she couldn't fault Krennic for being concerned for their safety. They were, after all, the wife and child of his chief researcher. Alpin's brilliance wasn't the only feature that distinguished it. In the dim past, a group of spacefarers had discovered the ruins of an ancient civilization. Vast structures built of immense blocks, statues, temples, and obelisks, all smoothed over by wind and eroded by seasonal rain. And archaeological excavations had been going on for nearly a standard century. With funding from the Republic before the time of Palpatine's chancellorship, a permanent camp had finally been established, consisting of prefab dwellings, wind turbines, a desalinization plant, and a small research center. The extensive ruins and the uniqueness of the terrain had prompted a team of scientists to petition for Alpin to be declared a legacy world, which would limit development, visitation, and the extraction of resources, but the entreaty was still pending imperial approval. The archaeologists had accepted that the surveying and mapping Lyra and Nari were undertaking were integral to the mathematical resource estimation process, and in some ways that was true, as a find of Kyber crystals would assure the planet's protection from corporate interests and exploitation. Though glaring white, so white that humans and certain other species needed to wear protective goggles, the surface more resembled the bottom of a sea. And in most instances, it took an expert to differentiate between artificial structures and what nature had created on its own. Spires whipped by the winds into swirls that resembled sweet confections. Hillsides embedded with fossilized sea organisms, corals, and shells. Long, dry riverbeds and waterfalls that recrystallized into marble. Curving slides and deep, gleaming basins. Close to the camp were a pair of sinkholes filled with the bluest water Lyra had ever beheld, as if lit from within. And in the crevasses of some hills grew a spindly vegetation that was as twisted and bleached as the spires themselves. For Jin, the world was an enormous white playground. The mixed species team of archaeologists were quick to make the new arrivals feel at home. Instantly adopted by everyone, Jin, indefatigable as ever, reveled in being the center of attention, entertaining everyone with her antics, watching closely, learning. In his eagerness to be useful, Haas became the camp's assistant chef and helped prepare unusual but tasty meals from the limited stores, while Lyra and Nari, weighed down with packs, harnesses, and survival gear, made preliminary forays into the complex cave system in which Kyber crystals might be hiding. The data on the alleged vein were very imprecise. Lyra wondered whether the crude maps had been discovered in the Jedi archives, or, as Orson maintained, had originated with the original spacefarers and languished for centuries in a Republic database. Whatever the case, Lyra had calculated, with some dismay, that completing a pre-feasibility study of the bedrock cave system of stalagmites, stalactites, and water and bio-eroded tunnels was going to require weeks of exploration, mapping, and analysis, and she could only hope that Galen was making do without her. She and Nari were exploring a wide minor tunnel in the principal cave system when they chanced upon an enormous chamber whose curving walls and arched ceiling were coated with a bioluminescent lichen that imparted a yellow glow to the entire chamber. Haas and Jin had accompanied them, and on entering the chamber, all the four of them could do was marvel in wide-eyed delight. Haas glanced at Lyra as she and Nari were sitting down, as if to drink in every square centimeter of the lambent place. Jin off on her own, though never far from Haas's watchful gaze. "The Jedi would say that the Force is strong here," Lyra said in a way that suggested to Haas some sort of telepathic exchange with her friend. Nari nodded and turned to him. "Can you feel it, Haas?"
He took his eyes off Jin to show her a perplexed expression.
What am I supposed to be looking for?
You're not looking for anything, Lyra said with a gentle laugh. You're feeling. He glanced around anyway.
I thought the forest disappeared with the Jedi.
Nari shook her head at him.
The forest could only disappear if all life in the galaxy perished.
Lyra was studying him.
Haven't you ever visited a world where nature is so profuse, so prolific and exuberant, that it yanks you out of your thoughts? Not a world like Coruscant, where you're overwhelmed, but on some far-flung planet that sort of dazzles you into silence and reverence. You can't help but sense the interconnectedness of all life,
Nari added. Hass didn't want them to think that he thought they were deranged, and he certainly didn't want to think any harder about Samovar or Wadi Rafa. So he said,
I guess I've visited a few,
and left it at that. But Lyra wasn't satisfied with the answer.
And you never felt anything? Even a sense of transcendent mystery?
He shrugged.
I guess I was too busy working to notice.
So the next time you find yourself on an unblemished world, Nari said, you should remember this moment and try to allow yourself to feel the Force.
Okay, he said. Next time.
Seeing Lyra turn suddenly to monitor Jin, who was tapping a stone with a small replica of one of the hammers her mother carried, he added,
Don't worry. I'm watching her.
Hearing him, Jin stopped her tapping and swung around.
Hass is watching me.
And don't you forget it, he said.
Lyra showed him a look of sincere appreciation.
You've been great with her, Hass.
That's because she's a trooper, he said loud enough for Jin to hear. In the best way, I mean.
The two women laughed. Then Lyra broke the ensuing silence to say,
I don't want to pry, Hass, but how did you first get involved with Orson?
Keep it simple, Hass reminded himself. He just makes use of me from time to time.
Lyra nodded.
He certainly has a talent for that.
And you?
Hass asked before Lyra could pose a follow-up question.
Galen and Orson are partners of a sort in an Imperial energy program.
On Coruscant?
In a facility that occupies what was the Bancor refuge.
I think I heard something about that,
Hass said.
Must be exciting.
Oh, very, Lyra said, eliciting a guffaw from Nari.
Tell Hass the truth, Lyra.
Lyra laughed with her.
Okay, so it's boring, and I sometimes wish Galen had never gotten involved. But he's happy, and the research could lead to a revolution in renewable energy. Well said,
Nari remarked. Lyra's laugh dwindled to seriousness.
I just wish the work didn't have to focus on kyber crystals.
Galen stood at the shuttle's viewport, gazing down on a ruined world. He had been wrong to surmise that Orson's plan was to echo the experience at Grange during the war. This was far worse.
What's the name of this world?
He asked Krennic.
Malpass, if it's of any consequence.
The starship that had brought them there was in stationary orbit far above the shuttle. It suffered invasions from both sides during the war, but managed to rebuild after each assault. Native population of sentient avians, but integrated with colonists from all over the sector.
Reva mentioned Malpass to Lyra.
Krennic didn't respond directly.
Below is what remains of the capital city. You can see where we set up the power grid, that blackened area to the left. The facility itself crowned that hill, just where you see those walls.
Galen looked ill.
What happened here? I was very precise in my notes.
The destruction had nothing to do with your research. We were preparing to connect to the power grid when the attack came.
Who attacked?
Krennic made a point of hesitating.
Galen, you're not going to hear this on the nightly Holo News, but
while the war is essentially won, it's not over. Not here. Not in many systems of the Western Reaches. I've heard reports of separatist holdouts. They're much more than holdouts. Call them what they are. Anarchists. They want the Empire to collapse the same way some hoped the Republic would, only this time, our enemies aren't rebelling in protest of Senate representation, trade routes, or taxes. They're intent on sowing chaos, on bringing everything down.